This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good evening, I'm David Gale and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by Paul McClure. On tonight's Informer, we will be talking with Eric Dennison about homophobia in sport, Fiona Patten on euthanasia and Anthony Wallace about the Equal Love Rally.
On the phone we have Eric Dennison, who is one of the co-authors of the Out on the Field study, which examined homophobia in sport. That study was released in 2014. Somewhat timely, given that we've just seen the end of the AFL and NRL seasons here, there's been a new study released that was done in the UK that provides similar results than the one that Eric Dennison was involved with. Eric, thanks for joining us on Joy 94.9.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me and for your interest in this topic.
No worries. So what can you tell us about, firstly, your study, the one that was done in 2014, Out on the Fields?
So Out on the Field was the largest study ever done on homophobia in sport, and it was also the first international study, and many of your listeners might remember there was the Bingham Cup in 2014. That was the World Cup of Rugby, which Joy was a media partner of. And so the study was done in the lead up to the Bingham Cup, and all the data was collected. Many of the rugby players who came to the Bingham Cup, as well as people who were taking part in the gay games which were happening in America that year, as well as many other people, nearly 10,000 people took part in the study. And then we released the final report in May of 2015, and that was what then led to the sports agreeing to take part, the Australian sports agreeing to take part in the Pride in Sport Index, which is essentially a yearly measurement tool to see how they're going with combating homophobia in sport. But the city at the time was the largest and of its kind in terms of its size, and then that was followed up recently by Stonewall, which is a very large UK LGBTI organization. It's, I think, it's one of our oldest LGBTI organizations in the world. And they followed up our study. They were partners with the original study and asked the similar questions because they wanted to see whether 2 years later, whether there had been any improvement. And sadly, there hadn't been any improvement. Yeah. Basically, they found the same statistics as what we found in the Out of the Field study.
Was it, were the results that you got, were they results that you were expecting to get, both in your study and now with the new study?
No, we were shocked.
Yeah.
We were shocked. We were actually quite shocked by the level of homophobia that's reported in sporting environments. And in Australia, the Australian number was 80% of Australians who took part, that's both gay and gay people, had witnessed or experienced homophobia in sport. And it was a huge city by Australian standards in terms of nearly over 3,000 people taking part. And so we were shocked, particularly that so many straight people said that they had witnessed and experienced homophobia as well. But right. I think more telling than that was only 1% of Australians thought that LGBT people were fully accepted in sporting culture, and most people thought that we were not accepted at all. So it was quite alarming. And I think, you know, as someone who, first, I'm from Canada originally, someone who had personally experienced homophobia when I was playing sport, when I was young, near, you know, around 20 years ago, I was hopeful as a researcher when that things had improved dramatically since, because that's kind of what you expect to happen, given equality has improved so much in the rest of society.
Well,
but sadly, that wasn't the case. Or,
well, that's
or
right.
Behind, far behind.
Because we have, I mean, we had the AFL Pride game here this year in Australia. There was a huge focus on LGBTI athletes at the recent Rio Olympic Games. And it is quite surprising that 2 years on from your study and things don't seem to be changing. What do you think can be done from here on out to address this, the issue of homophobia in sport?
I mean, Kevin, I wish I had an easy answer for you, and that isn't an easy answer. The challenge with LGBT athletes, and just to a degree transgendered intersex athletes, is that we're largely invisible. So you know if there's a black athlete on your team.
Yeah.
You take steps to ensure that your team is welcoming to black athletes. You know if there's a disabled athlete. You know if there's female athletes and that you need to support the growth of female sports. It's much more challenging with lesbian, gay, and bisexual people because we are invisible. We stay in the closet in sport. And so that was one of the top recommendations we made from out in the field. And all the other studies that have come out either before that or after have said the same thing, that much more research needs to be done into how to solve this problem. And it's interesting because there hasn't been a single published study anywhere in the world on how to solve homophobia in sport, ever. So that shows the desperate need for research. So we don't know the answer, but there's simple things. The Pride game is important because it gets people talking about it.
Well, that's right, and it seems that is something that needs to be done. There was some encouraging trends that were noticed in the Stonewall study, and that was that 88% of across the general population, 88% would be either proud or neutral if their favourite player came out as gay. The research showed that the majority of people think that offensive language towards LGBT people in sport is a problem. That was 59% of people. Two-thirds of people say that there should be more done to make LGBT people feel accepted in sport. So these are all positive things, but it is, I suppose, as you say, it's taking that next step and putting these things into practice. It's all very well speaking about it, but we need to you know, keep that ball rolling and knock it on the head, homophobia in sport.
Yeah, and I guess for our community, I mean, our community is amazingly resilient and also amazingly united when we have a focus and an issue to deal with. And I think there's a recognition within our community that a number of our young people are dying from suicide, quite a number who are attempting suicide. And sport is one of the environments where homophobia is the most likely to occur. So, you connect the two dots, it's the most homophobic environment. Lots of kids are committing suicide. If we try to change sporting culture, I think it will have a very positive effect in terms of saving a lot of young people or preventing them or maybe get to the place where they attempt suicide. So I think as a community, there is definitely a growing recognition that we need to start focusing on homophobia in sport. I think as a community, we need to start rallying around this cause and saying to the sports, listen, this is not acceptable any longer. It's not acceptable that vast majority, over 80% of people, thought an openly gay person would not be safe at a sporting event.
Yeah,
that's just not acceptable. And so we're no longer going to tolerate it. We want action. We don't just want platitudes. We don't want, PR efforts. We want actual tangible action.
Yeah.
Like the AFL Pride game. And the Pride game is a great example. And hats off to Jason Ball for doing that. And we also got a lot of support for the Bingham Cup from rugby, and I know the Melbourne Chargers were strongly supported by Victoria Rugby Union, and water polo has done some amazing things. But so that's the start, it's not the end.
Absolutely.
We're just at the beginning of the path, and now as a community, we have to, not only plug the sports along, but also encourage them to go along positively and really tackle this issue.
And it's an extremely important issue. Thank you so much for joining us on The Informer, Eric Dennison, co-author of Out on the Field study and talking about homophobia in sport. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Victoria is failing to allow people with incurable conditions a dignified death, and the state must have a conversation about euthanasia. These aren't my words. These are the words of Premier Daniel Andrews. More than half of Mr Andrews' cabinet has declared support for euthanasia, including Victoria, indicating Victoria could be poised to introduce laws that would make it the first Australian state to legalise the practice. Tonight on The Informer, we have Fiona Patton from a leader of the Sex Party. Hello, Fiona. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good to have you on the line. Look, I think you would have heard the intro. I was talking about how the Premier has talked about euthanasia, which is quite an amazing thing. Now, the Sex Party has always stood for euthanasia. Was it the Sex Party that got this issue on the agenda in Victoria?
Look, yes, it was ultimately. I mean, certainly there's been a number of other champions for voluntary euthanasia, but in the end, we were able to get the government to support the end-of-life choices inquiry that was a very significant committee government committee inquiry that brought down its report in June this year. That's now, as you mentioned in your intro, has led to hearing from a number of senior members of government supporting an assisted dying legislative framework.
Yeah, look, we've heard that a number of sitting members and government ministers have expressed their support for this legislation. We tried to approach some of them. Maybe they're just not quite ready to talk about it in the public sphere. The health minister and seven other ministers, which is, you know, pretty amazing in itself, are actually supporting this legislation. Yeah. There is a cross-party parliamentary inquiry at the moment. Is that something that do you think is going to be heard and then maybe buried? Or how is this all progressing?
I hope not, David. So I put up a motion to start the inquiry, and that was supported by the government. So the inquiry, as I say, brought down its report in June. The government has until the 9th of December this year to respond to that. And I think it's very interesting to hear the changing mood that is coming from those senior members of cabinet that you mentioned. And I remember the day I was actually elected, the day that it was official, which was in December last year. And the first thing I wanted to do was to address dying with dignity and to get some form of debate and conversation happening within the parliament. And at that time, Premier Andrews said, absolutely no way, this is not on our agenda, we will not be interested in doing this. So there has been a significant shift in that 18 months since that statement, and I'm very pleased. And I hope that the report that received, you know, well over 1,000 submissions, we talked to hundreds of people in public hearings, and I think it was a significant body of work that no other state or federal parliament has done to date. So I think it's having an effect. I hope that it will actually take us to a step that Victoria could introduce an assisted dying legislative framework in this sitting. And As you say, I mean, what we're hearing from senior government members is that maybe that's possible.
It sort of reminds us that we are in a very progressive state. Certainly we have a government that has got progressive views. I've noticed that the leader of the opposition, Matthew Guy, has repeated his opposition to euthanasia. But, you know, dying with dignity is a conversation. Do you think the public is really ready for this? Because, you know, it has been buried a little bit in the papers. You know, we're aware, certainly on The Informer, and you certainly are aware of it, but probably not everybody realises that this important conversation is going on. Do you think the public are ready?
I mean, certainly while the inquiry was going on, I received lots and lots of communications, emails, phone calls, letters from people from the community about the issue. And even since the inquiry has been completed, I still am receiving numerous emails and letters in support of this. We know that the majority of the population want to see better end-of-life choices for particularly terminally ill people. You know, we've got people like the coroner's court telling us that we have to change our laws. You know, really, at this point in time, I think the only opposition, true opposition to law around dying with dignity, is coming from the Catholic Church. And, you know, most recently we've seen the wonderful campaign by Andrew Denton being mounted with his Go Gentle campaign.
Yeah.
And that, again, really bringing it back into the public space, bring it back into the really broad conversation. And I know that the majority of the community wants to see change. I just don't know whether our parliamentarians are going to be brave enough to put their money where their mouth is and actually support legislative change. But there will be a book coming through our parliament before the next election, one way or another.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the government does react to this parliamentary inquiry. Just also, you know, we were talking the other day about how possibly the, you know, as LGBTIQ people, we have ageing parents, we have these sorts of things to address as issues later on, seeing our parents getting older and possibly being in the situation that they're suffering, of course, just as our Premier did with the tragedy of his own father dying. I suppose that's probably one of the reasons he has sort of thought about this issue. But, you know, even back to the AIDS crisis in the 80s, you know, we saw so many people that were suffering and were, you know, emancipated.
And I think this was a really interesting thing, and it really struck me during this debate because, I mean, I started with the AIDS Council, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s. So I really saw that kind of first phase of, you know, I was attending funerals on just an incredibly tragic a number of weeks every year, and it was awful. This is when we started to see people taking real autonomy about how they wanted to see their end of life. And when people were contracting HIV and AIDS in those days, they were having to face that issue of mortality and very awfully their imminent death. And we saw palliative care take on a whole new look. And a lot of that, sadly, came down to phobia, where, you know, being treated in a hospital or a hospice setting actually wasn't good for our community. The homophobia within that medical setting was still so stark and horrible that people were choosing to die at home. They were choosing to die on their own terms. And this was probably, it was a real catalyst to changing the way we deal with end-of-life choice from a palliative perspective. But also when we had young people who knew what they wanted, who wanted to live their lives that they wanted to live and wanted to die the way they wanted to die. And I think we saw some really interesting changes in our LGBTI community in particular around end-of-life choices. And now the rest of society is catching up.
Look, it certainly sounds like you're very passionate about this whole issue. I certainly am as well, and that's why I thought I'd like to bring it up on The Informer tonight. Look, just briefly before we say goodbye to you, I just noticed the other day that there was talk about you having conflict over a marijuana investment that you have at the moment. Certainly, Inga Pulich has accused you of standing to make personal profit out of moralising on the pain and suffering of others. They're her words. Because I think you have, and I know the Sex Party stands for legalisation of marijuana, certainly of medicinal cannabis. Are you going to make a lot of money?
I very much doubt it, because it was a very, very small investment into a public company that is looking at medicinal cannabis research, particularly around the low THC, high CBD. For those that know about these sorts of cannabinoids that help children with epilepsy. So far from, you know, profiting from the pain and suffering of people, I was investing in a company that was looking at medicines to help the pain and suffering of people. And as a member of parliament, where would I stand if I didn't stand up for companies that were doing work in this area? I mean, I don't have the government's checkbook. I don't write checks. I mean, this company is based in WA. It has nothing to do with Victoria. I invested in it long after the government had made its decisions and move around medicinal cannabis. But I do stand behind investing in what I believe in. I believe in renewable energy. You know, should I no longer invest in renewable energy companies?
It was
a stupid state.
It's a case of putting your money where your mouth is, I suppose. Look, thank you, Fiona. It's great talking to you, as always, on The Informer.
Thanks, David.
Great having you on tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
And tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Anthony Wallace from Equal Love. Tell us about the Equal Love rally this weekend, Anthony.
Good evening, David. Yes, so Equal Love are rallying this weekend. It's potentially a day or so before we'll know the fate of the Abbott Turnbull plebiscite. Possibly Labor will block it. All indications are that the plebiscite will be used, and that's certainly in line with community sentiment. But we will be rallying this Saturday in Melbourne, in fact, National Day of Action. And we are demanding that this plebiscite, which is, let's not forget that the plebiscite is the idea of Tony Abbott to oppose marriage equality, supported by Christopher and Bernardi. And even Lyle Shelton thinks that that's a good idea. Now, these are the opponents of marriage equality. It was over to be a delay tactic, and we've had enough, and no, we will not accept this any longer. And for the first time in history, David, we've got a majority of support in both houses of parliament. A free vote would pass in a matter of hours. As it did when John Howard rewrote the Marriage Act in 2004, there was no need of a plebiscite.
I don't think there was need of a plebiscite, there wasn't need for a plebiscite to change the superannuation changes as well. Look, it is very timely because on Tuesday I know that Bill Shorten and Tanya Plibersek are meeting with GLBTIQ elders and leaders, and they're going to be actually making a decision. So Tuesday is a big day, but Saturday as a National Day of Action is really important. Where are we going to be meeting?
Okay, so the rally in Melbourne will be at the Victorian State Library, at Royal Court there. We'll have some speeches from community sectors, families and marriage equality advocates.
And what time
is... like all rallies, that's 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Like all rallies, what are we going to be doing?
1 o'clock. So we'll listen to reasons as to why we need to keep up pressure, the reasons why the community is against this plebiscite. Energize the contingent to demand a free vote as a priority, and for Turnbull to have some element of legacy if he's prime ministership. So hope that resonates with the message that we're expecting. We'll march a city block, and we will end back at the library.
We'll also be there from Joy 94.9. There's quite a contingency of us coming. We'll have banners. We'll all be wearing our T-shirts. So definitely, if you're coming into the rally, come and meet us. Come and march with us because we support this cause as well. So, Anthony, just to recap, Saturday this weekend, 1 o'clock in front of the State Library.
Wonderful. Look forward to seeing you and the rest of Joy there.
Look forward to seeing you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
We'd like to thank tonight's guests, of course, Eric Dennison, who's co-author of Out on the Field Study, Fiona Patton, who is the leader of the Australian Sex Party and a member of the Upper House in the state of Victoria, and Anthony Wallace from Equal Love. Of course, The Informer will be on again tomorrow night at 6:30.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.